And number one in the will business, it's Nick Goldberg and Dan Hatfield. So welcome back to Phoenix FM, both of you. I have to say, I wasn't expecting Nick here today. I thought you were still... Sorry, not Dick. Nick, see? I'm in a terrible frenzy. Dan here today, because I thought you were still on holiday.
You sound as tired as I feel, Scott.
Dick's not here either. Sorry. He left.
Yeah, he's gone as well, yeah. No, I'm having a very bad day. I've already had a bad day at home, would you believe? I was trying to do something on the computer at home. Every time I typed this stuff into the computer, it disappeared off the screen. Four times. In the end, I threw everything in the air and fled from the house. Now, I hope you guys had a great Easter.
Thank you. Tiring.
I didn't even notice Easter because I was in Florida.
Well, you're just showing off, too. They're obviously paying you guys too much.
Hurry, Dan.
Now, I know last time that you were here, Dan, you sort of dropped Nick in it because you thought that Nick was going to be here and he was going to do the subject about challenging wills. But you've got landed as well now.
With no preparation.
We noticed. Okay, now look, before we start, I think it's worth restating the fact that in a programme like this, we can but scratch the surface. There are so many variables involved, but if you need advice, you know what to do. Pick up the phone, talk to the experts at Affinity. They'll be only too pleased to come and see you, talk over your individual concerns, and we'll be giving you that number a bit later on. Now, anyway... It comes as a little bit of a surprise, certainly to me, and it may do to others as well, that you could actually have your last will and testament challenged by anybody, and indeed that a judge could actually overrule your wishes. After all, surely if you have a right to, for example, disinherit a son or daughter, or if you consider they didn't care for you sufficiently, or there might be relatives that you simply don't like very much for whatever reason, that you why should they benefit from your death? So what are the possible grounds that there might be for challenging your final wishes?
Well, before I answer that, let me just say that this is a topic that I think some listeners are going to find not only interesting, but some of the things that we say they might find quite surprising, even unbelievable. But what we say is going to be absolutely true. Well, look, it isn't common for a court to change specific legacies in wills after death, but in a few cases, the courts might consider the financial circumstances of the person that's passed away, and anyone making a claim for financial provision to assess whether or whether what has been left to them could be considered as reasonable. And that's especially in the case of a surviving spouse, mm-hmm. Or live-in partner, a child or somebody who is treated as a child. We can expand on that a little later. Or someone who was financially dependent on the deceased. And these categories of people are defined very clearly in the 1975 legislation.
Right.
Which is called the Inheritance Provision for Family Independence Act. And in addition to that, a will can be challenged for a number of reasons. There might be a question over whether the will was actually valid in the first place. Mm-hmm. That is, whether it's accurately signed and witnessed in the right places by the right people. It could be that the mental capacity at the time that the will was being made is called into question. Or if it could be established that there's been undue influence by a third party. And there's some quite well-known cases that can be quoted in that sense. It's also possible to challenge a will if there's any doubt as to the way the executors are performing their duties. Mm. They need to act independently and in the best interests of the beneficiaries, of course. And sometimes it can be shown that they are favouring themselves when making distributions.
Oh, I can hardly believe that.
I knew you wouldn't believe that.
And they've got to advertise as well, have they, in paper? Or is that, do they have to do it every time?
It's not compulsory, but it's certainly recommended that an advertisement is placed, in a local newspaper to where the deceased lived, and also in the London Gazette, and that is a place. The advertisement basically is to see whether the deceased owed, principally, if they were owed any money to anybody.
Oh, I see. Rather than actually advertising for people to come forward and say, I want some of that.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm not often scanning the London Gazette to see if I've been left out of anyone's will. No.
I see it, I see them in the local paper.
Oh, you do see them, of course. Yeah. And that's principally for the purpose of seeing if the deceased owed anyone any money.
Surely it must be a bit tricky to establish if someone was not of a sound mind at the time that they made the will. How on earth could you do that?
Well, that's a difficult one. You know, if somebody is ill at the time that they make their will, and one of the most traumatic times that we have to take instructions is when what we call a time of a near-death experience.
Yes.
So somebody may be in hospital suffering from a life-threatening condition, a terminal condition. Mm. They may be on some sort of medication which is impairing their capacity.
But assuming that they made a will sometime before that,
I'm talking about them making the will on their deathbed. and that's more common than you might imagine. Oh, crikey, yes. I've done many of these in my time.
Yeah.
And if the content of the will and the distribution is not as some people may like it, and they may think it's unfair that they're only receiving a certain percentage or a certain sum, then they will look at the circumstances that prevailed at the time the will was made. Hmm. And if somebody was in hospital or even at home and they're on medication such as morphine, which can affect your thinking, if there could be someone suffering from dementia who makes a will. It doesn't mean you can't make a will when you're suffering with dementia. You need to be lucid, of course, and understand the act of making the will at the time. Yeah. But if somebody doesn't like it and they want to challenge it, then they will pick at whatever reasons they can, and testamentary capacity is one of those reasons that they may select.
Yeah, I think an important thing that we look at, Scott, is when we will go and talk to someone about their will, if they're existing clients of ours or if they're new clients, we will generally have a look at their existing will they've done already, if they've done one indeed already. Yeah? And we do a full fact find and find out, you know, who they have, a family tree, as Dan likes to call it. You know, do they have children? Uh-huh. Is it blended families, children from one side, children from another side?
Yeah.
And pretty much, you know, we're looking at, you know, what how does this relate to all the people involved? And then, of course, we can give advice then. And you know, in some cases, we'll question and we'll say, look, in your previous will, you wanted this. Now you're perhaps dropping someone out. You've left them out. Do you realise that could lead to them being able to make a claim against the will? That sort of stuff. So we at our part... we will do our job to have a look. Of course, if you're a listener and you haven't met us or seen us, then you may not be aware that that's what can happen.
But they could only, when you say that somebody can make a claim because they've been dropped from the will, they could only make a claim under certain circumstances, could they not?
Oh, absolutely, which Dan's going to talk through now. Yeah.
And right now I'm talking with both Nick Goldberg and Dan Atfield from Affinity about challenges to wills. And a point that Nick just brought up was that if somebody came along and changed their will at the last minute, he's got to warn them that, hey, there could be a bit of a problem here. And I was just trying to establish why there would be any risk of a challenge to that. Now, I think you've got the answer to that, Dan.
Well, Nick, the example that Nick gave was if somebody was changing their will to exclude somebody that was previously in the will. And if we assume that person was a member of the family, such as a child, because that that isn't untypical nowadays for people to fall out with one of their family members, one of their children, and want to exclude them from the will. It's mm-hmm. increasingly common. Nick also referred to blended families, of course, where people have got stepchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And they favour their own children, let's say, over the stepchildren. That could be another example. And if you exclude someone from the will that falls into one of the categories that I mentioned earlier, such as a child, or a stepchild, or someone who's treated as a child of the family, that person under the 1975 legislation could bring a claim. Now, bringing a claim, we need to be clear, doesn't mean to say that you're going to succeed in bringing that claim. The court will take a great deal of things into account in making a decision as to whether that claim is upheld or not. And surprisingly, to some people, some of those things will be the financial circumstances of the claimant. And whether they are in good health, whether they're working, their own financial resources, their capital position, and whether the provision or otherwise in the will is reasonable in that person's favour.
But could the person making the will actually put something in there saying, I specifically want to exclude this individual because?
Yes, they can. And
would that help?
It can help, but it's better supported by something written alongside the will by way of an explanation, a reason for the exclusion.
When you say by the side of the will, not in the will itself?
No, we call it some form of expression of wishes, a letter of explanation. A probate registrar, that's the person who's responsible for looking at the will before it is passed for probate, can scrutinise the content of a will and can strike through some parts of a will. So if you put something in a will that is a good example of that would be abusive, and I would never put anything abusive in a will. We always advise against that. But you do see some surprising things in wills. To support what you've said, for instance, I came across a will once where a lady had said to my nephew John, I leave the sum of 5p. Just to remind him that I never forgot how badly he treated his wife.
Yes.
Now, would the nephew have contested that?
I wouldn't have thought so.
Probably not. He's not on the list of people who could anyway.
Yeah.
But people will find all sorts of grounds. We had a case contested once by way of an example where the son of the deceased contested on the basis that the 50% of the 1.3 million that he was receiving was unreasonable because his half-sister was getting the other 50%. And this case is in the public domain. He lost the case and he had to pay not only his costs but his sister's costs as well. His sister's, I know, were £110,000. His costs would have been greater than that. And he argued in the first instance that his dad lacked capacity because he was on his deathbed, as we talked about earlier, suffering with cancer. He was on morphine. When that reason for contesting failed, he tried other reasons, like undue influence, blaming his half-sister for twisting his dad's arm into giving a 50%. He even at one point said that there was collusion between Affinity and his sister, and he supported that argument by saying, well, that's a strong argument because Affinity are based in Brentwood, which is Essex, and my sister lives in Essex. So, and
it's a rather loose, tenuous,
fairly weak argument, and he lost convincingly. But expensive case. I mean, we were going to talk about partly about costs today.
Yes. But if he'd gone to one of these solicitors that says offers a no-fee deal, then presumably he would have been told that it would have not been a very good idea to pursue it. Wouldn't he? Because otherwise he wouldn't have cost him so much if they'd taken it on board.
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you? I mean, we had a case once where the two of the three sons were being excluded, and they went to a solicitor for some advice. The solicitor requested certain information from us, which we are obliged to provide, which we did. And on receipt of that advice, that was referred to counsel, to a barrister. And the barrister advised the two sons that he would need £15,000 on account because this was going to be a very difficult case to claim. Now, the sons in that particular example didn't dig deep for the £15,000 because they took the advice on board that it was going to be very difficult and their chances were slim at best. And so they decided against it. But some people, Scott, will bring the claim even if they are told that they've got little or no chance of success.
Can I just jump in here, Dan? We was talking earlier about the perhaps average cost of how much that could cost. £15,000 perhaps doesn't even scratch the surface. Dan, you had that information?
Absolutely. I was in a seminar not too long ago earlier this year where we were told that you should really budget for about £150,000 if you're going to bring a claim.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to see how inheritances can be devastated by legal costs. The only winners, really, in a great many of cases, is the legal profession, and that doesn't include me, Scott, because we don't deal
with. It's not paying for your holidays.
We don't deal with contentious probate. That goes to council. But but it's a very interesting topic. I mean, one of the things that we were talking about off air was if somebody had promised somebody something. And if someone makes a promise to someone while they're alive and then doesn't carry that through, then that can be contested. But the person that brings the claim would need to be able to demonstrate timing, events, dialogue. They'd need fairly, concrete supporting evidence and maybe witness statements to say that promise was being made.
Okay, well, I just wanted to add one extra bit because I think we're going down one channel here. Of course, the other way of looking at what this law does is if, say for example, you feel you should have benefited from someone's will. Now, of course, look, you can see the problems. Have people got this sort of money to go and contest the will? And do they know exactly what they're able to do? Perhaps no. We use a good tagline affinity. We say, look, we can't predict the future, but we can help people plan for it. Because, of course, look, we don't know what's going to happen. Mm. People do get remarried after a spouse has died. People do change their wills, and people can get put in places of undue influence.
Yeah.
What we say is, look, if you've got the correct planning in place at the right time and people are involved with their parents, if that's who it's involved with, then hopefully you should never be put into a place where you have to contest a will because it should have all been kept up to date in the event of things changing. We see issues where people remarry, for example, after someone's died and they assume, not taking the right advice, but they assume that their existing will do its job. And of course, what happens is when someone marries, the old will is revoked by the marriage. And of course, if they don't know that, which in a lot of cases people don't, then they don't realise that the new husband or new wife gets the lot.
Right.
So, yes, not this is not just for people who are saying, oh, look, I've got to stop someone contesting. This is how we can ensure that people don't have to face that in the first place.
Okay,
perhaps. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Anyway, back to what we were talking about. We were just talking about challenges to wills, and you were saying how a number of people have been challenging them, even though it's going to cost them an absolute fortune to do this. And there's been an increase in will challenges, has there not?
Yes, there has. I guess the burning question there is, why has there been an increase in recent years?
Hmm.
And I don't think that you could put your finger on one specific reason, but there are a number of things, I would say, that have influenced people. You referred to something earlier like no win, no fee, and I'm sure that's had some influence on the amount of the increase in claims. I think their estates are bigger now. People have more wealth, property prices increasing, etc. Recession, I think, has had an impact.
Well, only if it's not going to cost you a six-figure sum to try and claim it.
Yeah, well, you don't have to pay until the back end. That's the thing. And if you win, of course, then you've got the money to pay for it. But then, if you win, and the other side have to pay your costs, you could be quids in. But it tends to be the bigger estates.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say, in my experience. Sort of maybe 1.3 million and above. That's the smallest estate that we've had, we've seen contested. It simply wouldn't be worth it, really, on something like a £200,000 or £300,000 estate, because the costs are disproportionate. In those cases, you may find that they go to mediation. Somebody may lodge what we call a caveat, which is an objection. It's a block on somebody obtaining probate, and then you kind of the defending position, the executors, would need to say to whoever is blocking the probate, right, well, you better tell us what your objection is and let's deal with it. It's like put up or shut up basically. But there are very, very again, going back to what we were saying about the legislation, very specific categories of people that are entitled to claim.
But a no-win, no-fee scenario, no company would take that on then unless it was a sizeable estate. They wouldn't do it for a £200,000 or £300,000 one.
It's extremely unlikely.
Yeah, okay.
Extremely unlikely.
All right.
Can I? One of the things I'd just like to drop in that's just sprung to mind, you remember we talked about the legislation. One of the categories of people that's entitled to contest a will that a lot of people will find very surprising is a former spouse or who hasn't remarried. So if you're divorced,
yes,
and you die and you haven't made what reasonable provision in the will for that divorced spouse, that divorced spouse may be entitled to claim. Now, it depends.
There was a case recently, was there not? There was one, I think, she was, or one of them at least, were travellers. And
he hadn't died, though, had he?
No, he hadn't died.
So this was where she came back for the divorce.
Sorry, I beg your pardon.
But it's similar, she's obviously coming back saying, yes, look, we weren't divorced, and I feel why I'm entitled.
That's right, you're quite right.
And that's exactly the same sort of thing that we're looking at, yeah?
Yeah.
And that's frightening, isn't it? How long was that? 25 years.
He'd obviously gone away, made his fortune, and it happened after that, so oops.
Good grief, that happens, amazing. Yeah. Go on.
Well, I was going to say that the other thing that you're finding a lot more of now, just supporting what Nick was saying earlier about blended families, that's had an impact as well. Mm-hmm. Remarriage.
Yes.
It's become a bit more normal, hasn't it? And more socially accepted that people get divorced.
Yes.
People get remarried after death.
Yes.
And of course, the issue is what's the repercussions to the beneficiaries. One thing we were talking about, I hope you didn't mind me butting in there, Dan, is, for example, when this was featured in one of the earlier shows, where people you'll get perhaps mum from one relationship, dad's died, and dad from another relationship where mum's died, and they say, look, let's, we don't want to live in each other's houses, let's sell up the houses and we'll go and buy a house together.
Yes.
And if they buy that property in a different manner, perhaps jointly, so they're joint owners, without understanding the implications of that joint ownership, then no matter what the will says, even if they've said, well, look, I'm going to leave my share to my children and you leave your share to your children, because joint ownership passes to the survivor on death, then they may find that it didn't go quite the way they planned it to happen, purely again because they just didn't realise and they didn't have the right advice at the correct time. So always important to know how people own their properties, especially if you're perhaps a beneficiary and mums and dads don't look at this sort of stuff, because of course with the right advice at the right time we can make things go the way people wanted them to happen.
So basically you can put corrective measures in at the time that the will is made, and if the will is updated you can advise on that to make sure everything is as watertight as it's possible to make it.
As it's possible to make it, I think that's a very good way of putting it.
Now,
I was going to talk about ambiguity, because that really follows on from what you've just said. Part of our job is to remove the ambiguity. If you get a homemade DIY will, with an off-the-shelf kind of...
Yes.
Am I allowed to say W.H. Smith? Well, you know what I mean.
Yes. You've said it.
It's off-the-shelf. People write their own will, and it's because they lack the... Understandably, the
expertise.
Then the ambiguity can lead to uncertainty, and of course can lead to people contesting because the outcome isn't clearly set out in the will. So I think that's a very good example.
But would a will like that be contested if you're talking about something that's £200,000-£300,000?
Well, I think we've already answered that.
The answer would be no.
Potentially. It's more likely to be no than yes.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean it's a definite no.
Right.
And it may mean that they go to mediation, for instance, to negotiate. They might block the probate and somebody goes to negotiate a settlement rather than go through the rigmarole of pursuing it through the courts.
Good stuff. Mm. All right. Fair enough. Right. So what are you going to be talking about next time? Because I think this is a lot more complicated than I thought it was going to be.
Well, I think that a principal part of what we're asked to talk to people about in estate planning terms is long-term care.
Right.
And, of course, earlier this month, the legislation changed in respect of long-term care. So we'd like to give people an update on that legislation.
Right, okay.
And the impact that may have on people in later life if they need some sort of domiciliary or residential care.
So that should be on the 27th of April, is that right?
Apparently so, yes.
That's what I've got.
Yes. 2 weeks time.
2 weeks.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks again. But as we said right at the outset, there are so many variables that in a programme like this we can scratch the surface. So my advice to you is to pick up the phone, call the guys at Affinity. They're going to be delighted to give you a free consultation in your own home where you'll be able to talk through your particular circumstances and sort out anything that's tailor-made to your requirements. And the telephone number for Affinity is 01245 850000. That's 01245 850000. Of course, you can also go to their website, which is affinity.co.uk.
Affinity Wills.co.uk.
Oh, we get there in the end. Okay, thanks very much indeed, guys. We look forward to seeing you next time.